in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, the appearance of the demon Vritrasura. This morning is text number 48. Translation. O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When the demigods finished offering their prayers, they anxiously waited for their enemy, Vritrasura, to be killed. This means that the demigods are not pure devotees. Although without difficulty one can get anything he desires, if the Lord is pleased, the demigods aspire for material profit by pleasing the Lord. The Lord wanted the demigods to pray for unalloyed devotional service, but instead, they prayed for an opportunity to kill their enemy. This is the difference between a pure devotee and a devotee on the material platform. Indirectly, the Lord regretted the demigods did not ask for pure devotional service. So he says, O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. So, the demigods have been having nothing but troubles ever since Indra offended Brihaspati. One hassle has led to another. And now, Vritrasura has come out to hassle him. So they've gone to the Lord and offered their prayers. So it says they're anxiously awaiting for their enemy Vritrasura to be killed. This is their attitude. The Lord sees them before him. They've offered their prayers, and it's as though they're looking over their shoulder waiting for them to drop dead. Then they can say thank you very much and go back to their enjoyment. So it says this means that the demigods are not pure devotees. So Krishna says, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, so they know this, that one who pleases Krishna, anything is available. So then, but then their motive is to please Krishna, to get something. And the demigods aspire for material profit by pleasing the Lord. So that's the difference. It's as though so many, when pure devotional service is there and the Lord is pleased, then so many benedictions. One automatically has the protection of the Lord. One automatically becomes free from all disturbances. So many things are there. So someone will see that and say, well, now I would like to get all these wonderful material side effects of devotional service, so I'll approach the Lord also. But immediately there's a motive. Whereas pure devotional service, there is no motive. This means that one worships Krishna, offers obeisances to Krishna, serves Krishna simply because he's Krishna. So when we desire something in return, that's less than love. We're using God as a means to an end. That means we think there's something higher or more desirable or more valuable than the most desirable, highest, and valuable thing of all, Krishna. So it's a little insulting. Actually, the demigods are insulting Krishna, that they are here before him, who's the greatest of all, but they want something more. So they're devaluing him, and they're trying to make an instrument of him. In other words, they're trying to engage him in their service. So this shows an impure mentality on their part. So pure devotees do not try to engage the Lord in their service. They don't want to take anything from Krishna. They become appalled at the idea that Krishna is giving me anything at all. Rather, they want to give to Krishna everything. This is the attitude of pure devotees. So they don't like to take service from Krishna. But there's a kind of competition, because when there is such a pure devotee, then Krishna wants to give everything to the devotee. But the devotee is reluctant to accept it. Anyway, he has no aspiration at all. Because why is that? Because pure devotional service in itself is the highest benediction, the best thing that there can be. Right? There's nothing better. So people approach spiritual life with so many desires. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami. Sense gratification, bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, they're all forms of lust. So some people will perform religious activities for bhukti, for their gross material sense gratification. That's generally going on everywhere. We call it karmakanda religion. You can see it in all traditions. Give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. And then more advanced people are performing religion for mukti, for liberation, or for knowledge. They want to develop some kind of, you know, open the third eye so they can see. I remember reading these books before I became a devotee about some Tibetan Buddhists. They would open the third eye, you know, do a little thing so you could see people's auras. You know. So the whole book was about, you know, auras and how you can tell a person's modes of nature by their auras. Right away, much more interesting than Krishna, right? Guy had his third eye opened, and he thought he saw a man on fire. Turned out to be a janitor in a rage. You know, all his anger looked like fire and smoke. And they could tell when somebody, whether this is true or not, I have no idea. They could tell, for example, moreover, when somebody was lying or tell the truth, you could see the colors change in their auras. The idea is everybody's surrounded by this field of subtle energy. And according to their anger or passion or truthfulness, it changes color. So when the Dalai Lama would people come to talk to him, somebody else would be hid behind a screen just to watch the aura of the person to tell them they were lying or telling the truth. So many people, if you go to like a New Age bookstore, you'll find volumes of shelves of books on auras. And people are like doing spiritual things so they can see auras. You know, you meet a dozen people on South Street that claim to be able to see auras. And that this is like, you know, this to them, being able to see auras, talk to this person, talk to that person, you know, astral travel, all this stuff. But it all falls under the category of karma. Because one person wants to get money to go to St. Moritz or something, or ski slopes, and another person wants to, you know, undergo some yogic process so they can, you know, astral travel. It's the same. It's the same. So all this stuff goes under the name of spiritual life. It's not spiritual. This is another version, bhukti, mukti, siddhi. Oh, we hear about this other group, how everybody's supposed to be able to levitate. That's their big thing. They're supposed to be able to, you know, by meditation, they can float. The siddhi. I don't believe it's true, but anyway. Siddhi kama. That's lust. So you find all these shells, spiritualism, occult, religion, and it's all based on these different things. Hardly anywhere will you see very much about pure devotional service, because it's rare. People are distracted by so many other things. Just like here, the demigods, Vibhudarshavaha, Krishna calls them very intelligent, Vibhudi. The Buddha, Rishabha, best of the intelligent demigods. But he gently rebukes them. He said, it's a fact that anyone who approaches me can get what they want, but actually those who are tattvavit, those who actually know the truth, they don't ask me for anything else but devotion to me. But their minds are fixed in watch Vichasura, you know. If they had devotion to Krishna, pure devotional service, Vichasura automatically would be taken care of. There's no need to even pray to Krishna for this kind of thing. Automatically that would go on. But they're anxious for their safety. They're anxious for their kingdom. They're anxious for their palaces. They're anxious for their sense gratification. So, although they're devotees, they're not very pure. So, that's the point that's made here. So, where can you get pure devotional service? It says that Lord Chaitanya Krishna Prema Predayate. He's giving it away. Otherwise, you would hardly know about it. Because although it's taught in various places, and it's put forward, actually there are so few practitioners who do like that. Even to have it as a goal, very, very rare. We are apt to get distracted by so many other things. Substitute, counterfeits. And there's so much discouragement. Because sometimes people are preaching one thing and practice something else. That's discouraging. That's why it's said that milk, when it's touched by the lips of a serpent, has a poisonous effect. How can that be, that if you hear a Maha Mantra from the wrong person, it actually doesn't act? Because it can become discouraging. You can get misled. You can get drawn into a dead end. It's just like, say, somebody like Jim Baker. He may preach and preach, I've been saved by Jesus Christ, and all you wonder, well, what is this saved and what is its value? What is its effect? What does it mean? It seems useless, empty. Are you simply going on like this? You say, I've been saved. You're advertising yourself. Just see what happens, how my life has been transformed. But I don't see any transformation. So then the idea of salvation by Jesus Christ, you're not interested. So he's poisoned it. Has poisoned it. So there's so many discouragements are there on the path of to offer pure devotional service. Therefore, we have to be clear. First of all, we have to understand what it is. Anya abhilasita shunyam jnana karmadi anavrita anukulena krishna nushilanam bhaktir uttamam has been defined for us very clearly. It's to serve Krishna favorably. Because in one sense everybody may be considered to be serving Krishna. But pure devotional service means to serve Krishna favorably. The way Krishna prefers. We say, what do you want? And then we do. It's like this. More favorable to say like that, what do you want? And then I do it wholeheartedly. We used to see people come to Prabhupada. Two kinds of devotees would come to Prabhupada. They say, what do you want, Srila Prabhupada? And they would do it. And other people would say, Prabhupada, I want to do this. Is that okay? I would say, yes. Which is more favorable? What do you want? I remember there's one devotee that came to Srila Prabhupada and was with him for a long time. And finally Prabhupada said to him, the dearmost devotee to me is one who serves me far away. And the next day the devotee was gone to some remote place to preach. The next day. The very next day. So that's favorable. What do you want? And then I'll do it. Whatever your order is, I accept it. Of course, it's also services. I want to do like this. Yes, that's all right. Sometimes Prabhupada would go pretty far. I remember when I was a new devotee, this fellow came around. He was following a basketball team around. There's some Philadelphia basketball team. What's their name? He's following the 76ers around. He was friends. He was an initiated devotee. He was a disciple of Prabhupada. Although I never saw him after this time. He came in the temple. He said he was in town. And I was, you know, this was 72 or 73. I was brand new. I'd never seen anybody like this before. And he was friends with several members of the 76ers. And he was preaching to them that if they chanted Hare Krishna, their game would improve. So it emerged from my discussion of him is that he was a person who was enormously attached to basketball. Enormously attached to basketball. And so attached he couldn't give it up. And so he was following around this basketball team and was able to, you know, to make friends with some people. I mean, he must have hung out in the locker room or something. But his big line was, because of course many devotees would say to him, you know, hey, come on, this is a very strange thing to be doing, you know. And it was clear in those days, Prabhupada's idea was we weren't supposed to engage in what he called frivolous sports, of which one, basketball, was understood to be one of them. But he would say, it's authorized, it's authorized. He would whip out this letter that he had from Srila Prabhupada, signed. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, telling him he could do it. So he said, okay. But one knew that he wasn't long for this movement. You know, it wasn't long. Prabhupada was so kind. Yes, well, whatever. You know. So the best pure devotional service is best. Krishna, what do you want me to do? And then I just do it. That's called surrender. Now there's feelings among some people in our movement right now that I surrendered. They told me to surrender and I surrendered, but that was actually wrong. It was artificial. I surrendered, but I really wasn't on that platform, they say, like that. And now I regret it, having done so. And they caution new devotees who are coming, whatever you do, don't surrender. You'll regret it later on. But of course the point is that no one ever didn't surrender because always they had not come to the platform of actually surrendering to Krishna. So there should be no resentment. If this is what Krishna or the spiritual master orders me to do and I do it, I'll make great I'll make some great advancement, but there should never be some resentment. One should try to understand how it's the best thing for me to do, and do that wholeheartedly. It should be wholehearted. Surrender means wholehearted. Yes, this is what I want to do, and I'm willing to bear up under any austerities there may be in the process of doing this. Is this resentment? Resentment means that later on there's some missing out on some sense gratification. I think, oh well, I could have had some sense gratification. Or I didn't get Krishna consciousness and I didn't get sense gratification either. But if we don't get Krishna, if we say I fully surrendered and then I didn't make any advancement, that's not right. That means I pretended to fully surrender. On the side I engaged in so much sense gratification. I maintained material desires. I did not try to clear up the offenses in my chanting on the holy name. Then I didn't make any advancement. This is why. We will not make advancement in Krishna consciousness if we don't try to clear up our offenses against the holy name. So if I surrender to Krishna, but in my heart I maintain all kinds of material desires, then it's a fact I won't make any advancement. That externally I've surrendered, I'm doing everything, but in my heart I'm maintaining material desires. Notice the word is there, maintaining. It's not an offense that I may have material desires. The offense is that I maintain them. I don't try to get rid of them. I don't pray to Krishna to destroy these material desires. Material desires can come and go. Prabhupada said that as long as we have this body, we may expect there may be material desires. But the difficulty is when we are not averse to those desires, when we cultivate them or maintain them. In the watering process of watering the bhakti lata bija, if we don't try to uproot those desires, they'll also be watered and they'll grow. And they'll become bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's why 10 years down the line, people say, I surrendered, but I regret it. Because now there's some big weed of material desire, which is totally unfulfilled and has been growing, growing, growing unchecked for 10 years. And now it's formidable. So one has to surrender means serve Krishna favorably, one has to try to uproot material desires. It's not necessary to feel guilty that one has material desires. Guilt is a very unproductive emotion. One can certainly regret that one has material desires. One can certainly feel sad that one has material desires. But the main thing is to pray to Krishna to please destroy them. These material desires are so strong, I cannot uproot them myself. It's like a weed, you know. Sometimes the roots go way, way down there. So I can't uproot them by my own strength, but I know you can uproot them. So if we pray to Krishna to remove our material desires, then actually we'll make spiritual progress. But if we're secretly cultivating these material desires, and maybe praying to Krishna, please fulfill them, then we'll could be in trouble. Because if Krishna is really kind, he won't fulfill them. This will be explained later on, that just like a doctor, a physician, will not allow a patient to do something that's going to injure the patient, even though the patient wants to very badly. Our mother won't allow a child to take poison, even though it may smell good. It's like sometimes, you know, you get these household cleansers that have got this, you know, lemon scent. The child may think it's lemonade and drink it, you know. So they won't. So similarly, Krishna will not fulfill the desire of the devotee if he knows that it's bad for him. Although demigods do that all the time. They don't care so much. Even if it's bad for you, I'll give it to you. That's why people worship the demigods, not Krishna. So, we have to try to become free from these material desires. This is part of the surrendering process. So that's favorable devotional service to Krishna, which is free from karma, jnana, etc. The desire for material improvement, the desire for spiritual rewards, opulences, divine knowledge, third eye opens, swirling chakras, all that, you know, seeing this, seeing that, touring the universe on airplanes, you know, all that kind of stuff. No, I should have no desires except the desire simply to satisfy Krishna. That's the pure devotional service. All other things are a distraction. So anyway, the Lord is here regretting that. He's saying, Mayi ekanta motir nanyat mato vanchati tatvavit. Ekanta, single-minded or exclusively fixed. The devotee should be single-minded, exclusively fixed, nanyata, nothing else, mataha, except for me. This is the standard. So he's a little regretful that these demigods aren't on a higher platform. He's there, Krishna's rasamayi, he's made of love and full of love, ready to engage in deepest, most wonderful loving exchanges. And here the demigods right before him, and they're distracted, they're thinking about something else with this tiny little problem of Vrijasura. So they're ignoring, in effect, Krishna, even though they're before him. So he's a little disappointed. Okay. We'll stop there. Questions or comments? Yeah.
There was a gentleman. What would be the difference between a demigod and Maya? means being identified with something particular, material, you know, and material being quite desired. And then earth, materially ignorant, you know, creature, who might be, in sense, not so sophisticated and elevated, platform demigod, but he can liberate himself very, very quickly, according to time, place, and circumstances. I mean, is there really a difference, essentially, between that and that mind, between those two individuals, the sophistication of demigod's illusion? What different types of knowledge can be used for liberation for both purposes?
Well, if they get pure devotional service, they both get it from the mercy of Krishna. Here on this earth planet, one may not be very sophisticated. His whole life may be more involved in the modes of ignorance. May not know very much. But after all, for people on this earth planet, there is advantages, especially right now, this Lord Chaitanya's mission. And Prabhupada said that the demigods are lined up to take birth in the Hare Krishna movement because their chances of spiritual advancement are better in the Hare Krishna movement coming out to Lord Chaitanya than they are in the spiritual world. So they're eager to take part. So actually better facility, even though so many standard of living is not higher. And the high standard of living of the demigods is a distraction. Even though they have so much facility that could be used in Krishna's service. In fact, they're busy enjoying, so they can't do so much. But some miserable person here just gets the mercy of Krishna, can make so much advancement.
So within a qualification...
I'm sorry?
Qualification, classification, you know. Classification, there is no real difference. I mean, essentially, there is difference in a formal appearance, right?
But yeah.
The point is, they know their body, they know their illusionary...
No, they're the soul, right. Soul is the same. Same soul.
They don't
soul.
See things as they are, so therefore it's the same. They're in the same trouble.
Yeah.
Same class.
Prabhupada explains the difference. It's like within a prison house, some prisoners who are locked up have nicer facilities than other prisoners who are locked up. But basically they're all prisoners and they're all in the same situation. So the fact that one has a nicer cell than the other is not much to think about. So there's first class cells, second class cells, third class cells, and so on. But basically, they're all prisoners, all condemned. So the differences are minute. Okay? Well, let me ask it goes before you use all your time up.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Can you explain what is the difference between someone who wants knowledge but don't attain Krishna and someone with true knowledge realizes Krishna is an enemy?
Well, let's see. The first part is somebody who wants knowledge, but without Krishna. Yeah, that's a jnani. And somebody else who, through knowledge, that person becomes a devotee. If his knowledge is complete, he'll discover Krishna. Yes, but the jnani is one jnani is incomplete, and his knowledge remains complete, maybe because he's hostile to Krishna. But the one who has actual knowledge, because Krishna says this, he says, "Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam mam upajite." Bahunam janmanam ante. That means after many births. Jnanavan. Jnanavan means one who possesses jnana, knowledge. Mam prapadyate. He surrenders to me. So So if he actually gets knowledge, then he surrenders to Krishna. Vasudeva sarvam iti. He says, Vasudeva or Krishna is everything. And then Krishna says, sa mahatma sudurlabha. You don't find such a mahatma everywhere. It's rare. It's rarely to be seen. So here, when Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami says, free from jnana, jnana in this case means either the desire as a motive just to attain knowledge, to become omniscient like God. Because there's a kind of lust people have for knowledge also. You don't meet them in the corner bars, but you meet them in universities, and it's just as much as an obsession as a any other kind of lust. They want to know. They want to be able to understand everything. You meet people like that? How the universe works. What makes everything go? They want to understand everything. They want to hold all of material nature in their mind like a walnut in the palm of your hand. He wants to know Krishna, different. That's love. Huh? Should want to serve Krishna. Actually, even to want to know Krishna is a little. What you should want to do is serve Krishna, and then Krishna will reveal as much as he desires. We want to know Krishna only because we love Krishna, that Krishna is so wonderful. That we're eager to hear and chant about him and learn more and more of his wonderful qualities and features. But Lord Chaitanya says that even if he never appears before me, he's still my Lord, unconditionally. He may reveal himself, he may not reveal himself. That depends on him. If it makes him happy, never to appear before me, then that makes me happy. Whatever he wants, that's all right with me. I have no desires in this matter except to see Krishna happy. If it makes Krishna happy to keep me outcast, to keep me away, to keep me in this material world, birth after birth, if that's what he wants, then that's what I want. If he prefers the association of millions of souls before he ever comes, if he ever comes to me, that's fine with me. This is love. Okay? Yeah.
An ordinary devotee.
Back to reality, huh?
He wants to serve Krishna, but at the same time he has his particular style, his character, his desires. You know, he'll do his service to Krishna in whatever his certain way. Everyone's an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So, how wrong is that? He's not pure, he's not totally surrendered, but he's trying his own way.
Well, that's good. Then he's making progress. You know, but we should understand what the goal is. We'll always be an individual. Never mind your typical ISKCON devotee. Your typical eternal associate of Krishna has his own style, his own individuality. You know, Krishna works it out very nicely. We don't have to worry about maintaining all that, because Krishna really takes care of it. That's why Krishna has to become our career manager. He can do it a whole lot better than we can. And he'll actually, what happens is that when a devotee gives up all desires just to serve Krishna, then as a matter of fact, Krishna fulfills all his desires better than he could have ever thought. Prabhupada may have been willing to have made one devotee, but Krishna made other arrangements that he made thousands. But, I mean, Prabhupada, I was in New York when Prabhupada gave a lecture about desires. He said, one should go out on book distribution desiring to distribute thousands of books, but if only one goes out, you should not be disappointed. That's detached. Anyway, Krishna can take care of everything. The devotee just has to depend upon Krishna. So, but if we have some, you know, way we want to be, if the clear first thing is that if sometimes we may be confused, what does Krishna want me to do? But if already I've got certain requirements to Krishna, I'm going to do A, B, C, D, you know, then I'm not really inquiring from Krishna, what do you want me to do? So the first thing is I can say honestly, Krishna, I would like to do A, B, C, or D, but I really want to know what you want. So if we are inquisitive to Krishna, what do you want me to do? And confess that I may have so many material attachments, but then we want to find out what you want to do, then the indication will come, what he actually wants. If he has some indication that we'll do what he wants, he'll tell us. But if he's not going to tell us, we're just going to ignore it. We have no intention of following his order. So first of all, we have to honestly be inquiring from Krishna, what do you want? And be ready to do it. And then he'll let us know. And then we should pray from the mercy to actually execute it. He's pretty far out what happens, but anyway, that's part of the surrendering process, you know.
So you're describing it, the most important thing is the attitude.
Yeah.
Of the devotee, as opposed to his actual level of position.
Yeah, because the attitude will help you make advancement, whatever your level of position is. The point is, we may be, you know, all over the landscape as far as our levels of advancement. That's all right. But we should all be trying to make advancement to go from where we are to more and more surrender to Krishna. We don't want to see anybody slipping back or treading water, you know, life after life, same place. It'll be discouraging, you know. It's the same souls are still in this movement, you know. 500 years from now. We can really get tired of each other. Same old Maya. At least we get new Maya, you know. Yeah.
There's some a person's relationship to this. What about a person that may serve God, the mind, live a simple life, not so materialistic? But in regards to acquiring knowledge about the origin of the universe and so on, all the little technicalities, as far as devotional service, you may not have so much interest.
Yeah, well, that's all right, you know. People are different. If that holy name is always on your tongue, and then even if you're born in a family of dog eaters, te pusta paste, juhuvu, shashnur, ayar, brahmanachur, namagrinanti, you've studied all the Vedas. You've been to all the places. You can't afford a ticket to India, you've still bathed in all the holy rivers. You know? So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Prabhupada gave us these books. We should read them. We should try to learn them. But there's also the story about Chaitanya finding the illiterate man, you know, leafing through the pages of Bhagavad Gita with tears in his eyes. And Chaitanya said, you actually understand Bhagavad Gita. Even though he couldn't read a word of it.
We were talking the other day. Reminiscing about certain devotees have been around for over 10 years. They're very simple.
Very what?
Simple. And they just do very subservient type of work in the temple community. Not much shastra, but serving.
Yeah, but they can be very advanced. Sure. depends on how much one is surrendered to Krishna. Because it doesn't depend upon the material body and the material mind. It really doesn't. Not a lot of people believe that, but it's true. We have to stop now. It's time to open the doors. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.